WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today we have a special guest, Anchor from Checked, and today we will talk about a super exciting topic, and that's decentralized identity and how to truly own your data. Thanks, mate, for being here. It's really a pleasure talking with you. And starting out, I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself as well, to let us know what you're currently working on and whatever you feel is worthwhile to share here.
Sounds good. And thanks for having me here, Kevin. Very excited to be on your podcast. My name is Anchor Banerjee. I'm the CTO and co-founder at Checked, not pronounced as Checked, which some people do. And we are a decentralized digital identity network built on Cosmos SDK. What we are trying to do is to make your data more private, more secure, more portable. And we can go into a bit more detail on how all of that works. What I'm currently working on and what is extremely exciting is we've also been working on an associated project called creds.xyz. And creds.xyz came from a personal sort of need. It builds on top of the Check network, and it's all about decentralized social reputation. How do people within Web3 communities can have the ability to carry their social reputation as members within a community or members within a DAO to other communities? And that's really exciting because we feel that it's one of those use cases which I think people more immediately recognize, although the broader application of our technology can be quite wide. And in terms of my passions, I would say I really look forward to building a new web or new internet where people have far more control over their own personal data. I think it's an absolute shame that this was not thought of and not baked into the models of the internet when it first started off, or the World Wide Web in over the past 20, 30 years. And I'd really love to see some of these very, very large tech companies get disrupted, who are the gatekeepers of our data quite often.
Love it. Great mission. You just mentioned CredStore, and I had a quick look at it as well. And I would be really curious about, you just said you're tying in or including, from my understanding, on-chain reputation, like when you joined the DAO and contributed to some kind of project. Do you also try to solve the gap between off-chain data and on-chain reputation, or how are you thinking about that?
That's an excellent question. We do use a blend of on-chain and off-chain reputation or on-chain storage. The way I describe it is, traditionally, if you think of decentralized identity, the way people try and solve it is by putting some information into an NFT or a proof of actual person, or POAP, if you've heard of that term, and writing that onto chain. It's very useful for a lot of things that are status symbols. It's a bit like parking a Lamborghini outside your house or a Ferrari outside your house and making all of your neighbors feel jealous. It's great for that. But the challenge with the model where NFTs or other on-chain storage have is that it is also public for anybody to go and view and see. So you could have it in a wallet address that is not tied to you, but if at some point, if somebody finds out that is the wallet address that belongs to Kevin, they'd be able to figure out what NFTs you hold over there. So we use a blend of on-chain and off-chain reputation. It's built on an international standard that has been built by something called the World Wide Web Consortium, or W3C. You might hear of that term a lot. And it has involvement from not only Web3 companies, but a lot of very traditional Web2 companies like Microsoft and Mozilla and Google and so on as well. And the basic idea here in that on-chain versus off-chain is, on-chain, you store public keys and public signatures that allow you to check that some data is tamper-proof. And then you store the actual details about, say, your social reputation or your healthcare or your education record or your employment history, any number of use cases, you store that in off-chain wallets. These wallets can be a bit like the browser extension crypto wallets that you have. They can be on mobile. They can even be stored on physical cards. I've seen that as an example and worked on some projects that did that. They could be printed out as QR codes on paper for backup to have recovery seeds. But the general idea is that if you have them in purely stored in an off-chain wallet or identity wallet of some sort, when you go and show this to someone to try and say, hey, my name is Kevin, I live in Germany, I'm the host of this particular podcast, I've been doing it for the past 5 years, you have that in a tamper-proof digital format within your identity wallet. And when you go and show it to someone, what they're able to do is they're able to check the stamp or the signature that exists publicly on chain to verify that the thing that you've just shown them has not been tampered with. The example that I use for this is a bit like if you got a paper bank statement sent by your bank and it had a rubber stamp at the bottom. So storing on chain is a bit like the rubber stamp. What does a rubber stamp look like for this particular bank? That is the bit that you store on chain. But the paper, which contains your bank statement and your, let's say, the transactions that you've done and the address that you live in and your name, that is physically just with you. And you get to display and choose whom you share it with. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't prevent you from publishing some of these digital credentials that are tamper-proof in a public fashion, the same way that you might go and make your Twitter profile or your Facebook profile or certain things within those profiles public and other things private. You still have the option of doing that, but it just gives a lot more flexibility and control on whom do you want to share certain kinds of information with.
That sounds pretty interesting. Always when we talk about identity, just some context. My first touch point with crypto itself was a decentralized identity startup many years ago.
Oh, wow.
So, and what I remember, one of the biggest issues to being or creating a decentralized identity actually is the kind of issuance. Like, how do you not just certify that the data has not been tampered with, but mm-hmm. also is the original data that you issued on chain, is that actually true? Like, mm-hmm. what's your approach with that? Or is that something where you go a similar approach with Polygon ID, if I'm not mistaken here, where you just have these issuers and they can basically input whatever data they want and then it's on their reputation to certify if that information is correct?
That's an excellent question on how do you even understand whether a digital credential that somebody holds is trustworthy or not. The analogy that I use is if you had a digital credential that said you were an employee of a company issued directly by your employer, that is obviously more trustworthy from a human perspective than you writing it yourself on a sheet of paper with crayon saying, I'm the CTO of Twitter, now known as X. So when people go and see that, they will obviously see, actually, I don't know how much I want to trust that particular piece of paper. But if you had an actual employee badge, or if you had an actual thing that came from somebody reputable, they'd consider that to be much more trustworthy. The way we try and solve that, actually, I'm glad you raised this question, is because we do think this has been a massively missing step within a lot of decentralized identity over the past 6 or 7 years that I've been working in this space, but also in which it has existed. And so what we've also designed within the Checked network, which is our network on which you can publish these on-chain elements, is you're able to publish trusted issuer lists. So for example, if you wanted to have a credential issued by DAOs on Ethereum, people might create trusted issuer lists of what are trustworthy DAOs within the Ethereum ecosystem. And what are their public keys and what are their public signatures? Similarly, if you wanted to go and check what is the structure of the data inside. So for example, if you have a passport, it's pretty standardized across the world, what those various different fields and what order they come in. That's why, regardless of the language in which the passport is issued, when you go traveling to, I don't know, Tuvalu, they're still able to go and check what is the data inside your passport. So we also allow people to, in a tamper-proof fashion, go and publish associated elements that solve some of the trust and the reputation problems that you were describing in decentralized identity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You also just mentioned before that you're able to share data publicly and privately. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm pretty sure you're already expecting this, but most, just with the recent hype, with all these validity wallops out there, you probably use CK, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So how is that interwoven with the public data? Like, you basically host it off-chain in your wallet, on your app, wherever, on your application, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And then the user shares these claims, or is that some kind of, what's the high level user flow I could imagine now? How does it work to share information? And yeah, that's the...
Absolutely. So there's two elements of zero knowledge. One part of it is how we, as an example, design the identity wallet for creds.xyz. It's purely within a browser. You don't need to download an application. You don't need to download a browser extension. But we designed it very much similar to how password managers work. So if you've used something like 1Password, Bitwarden, what they do is they synchronize your password across all of the 3, 4, 5 different devices you have. And you have to enter a passphrase to go and unlock that wallet, but it's only ever decrypted on your own device. So after additional credential has been given to you, when we back that up in an end-to-end encrypted fashion. Very much similar to how WhatsApp or Signal works, or how password managers like 1Password and Bitwarden work. So when it is backed up, it allows you to access and log on and access this identity wallet on any device that you want. However, when the encrypted backup is downloaded, you're only able to read the contents within it and what these digital credentials contain about your social reputation or other facts about yourself, only if you have the passphrase. The public sharing aspect of this, what we allow people to do is, let's say you wanted to share maybe a time-limited link. Like, this link is only accessible for 24 hours, or this link is only clickable 5 times, or this link I actually want to make public forever in a collection that I have on the website. What we do at that step is, when you're logged into the creds.xyz wallet or similar SSI, self-sovereign identity, that is, or decentralized identity wallets, you essentially create a snapshot. It's the same as generating a QR code for your vaccine certificate, which many people might have had to do in the past 2 years. And you just go and publish that. Now, that allows you to share the link with anybody else who might want to view those details and verify those details, but they will get informed that it was generated on, say, the 1st of August. And if they access the link maybe 3 months down the line in October or November, what they might actually want from you is to say, maybe generate a fresh link and share it to me again to still prove that you're controlling and holding on to that wallet. So it's a bit of a thing that we did for a UX reason. A lot of decentralized identity wallets right now assume that you are sharing these digital credentials live and in real time with someone. And while that is true in some use cases, we don't think that's necessarily true in all use cases. Imagine if you wanted to prove your membership to a DAO to somebody on Telegram, but they are not in the same time zone as you. So they might be wanting to go and look at that 8 hours later. So how do you handle that use case? And what we do for the user in this particular example is we take that snapshot, we host it on their behalf, and follow the rules that they might want to apply to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One question that comes to my mind when I hear all this is, one issue I personally, or one challenge, let's put it that way, challenge, that identity solutions oftentimes have is, why, from a user's perspective, would I use this? Simply because identity is actually, in the end fashion, like the end result, verified by the government, right?
Yeah.
Our public institutions, and not by companies. So how do you go about that? What's the pathway for checked? Is it like you go to governments and try to integrate it here? Is it some more kind of business use cases? Oh, well, it's a verified employee, whatever. Where is it going? Like, what's the plan?
I think it's we have a very broad approach to where it could be applied. We do, in fact, talk to some very large government agencies or traditional digital identity, as I call it. So traditional digital identity might be when you're asked to do a Know Your Customer or KYC with a bank or a crypto exchange. Or other examples of this is when you have driver's licenses and passports. And I think that's how we typically tend to understand and know the word identity. I think it's actually a bit broader than that. So in the creds.xyz social reputation examples, maybe you want to prove when you're voting within a DAO that you hold more than 1 million tokens in that particular DAO without actually revealing what is the wallet address that it's contained in and what's the exact figure. You just want to prove I have more than a million. Because it is a challenge right now. Most DAOs, they will give you voting rights based on how much you're staking. And that in itself is just says how much money you have. It doesn't say perhaps maybe you are more important to the DAO for other reasons, such as you're a good code contributor or you're a good governance contributor, or maybe you make very insightful comments. And so for that kind of credential, what we have been building, for example, on the Creds.xyz platform is it's a credential that will be issued by the admins and the moderators of that DAO. It might be tied through a pseudonymous handle, like a Telegram handle or a Discord handle. It doesn't have to be, but it could be, or a wallet address. And it just states the proof that has been issued by the DAO, which does know what the address is and says, yes, Kevin does hold more than 1 million check tokens. Now, what's interesting about that kind of identity is it is not actually legal identity, or it's not actually legal Know Your Customer. It is relatively pseudonymous. And I think when you actually start thinking along those lines, what you find is identity applies to a broad range of use cases which are not government issued. The Starbucks loyalty membership card that I have, even though it doesn't have my name on it, is something that is personally belongs to me. It doesn't go through the same level of governance and assurance checks that maybe getting a passport involves. There's still something that is my personal data. Or for example, if I have certain preferences when buying clothing on e-commerce stores online and buying clothing online, that is also a part of my identity and is also personal data that's related to me. So when you take it in the broader context, I think the decentralized identity space has been quite focused on government-issued credentials becoming digital. And my sort of like, you know, hypothesis or challenge on that is, how often do you ever need to show your education degree? Let's say if it was issued as a digital credential. I've only had to do it once in my life for the first job that I got. And ever since then, that has not been a major factor. So the challenge is, I think when you start thinking of things like Know Your Customer, most people get their first bank account when they're 16 or 18, and they never have to do a KYC until the moment they buy a house, perhaps. 20 years later. So it just doesn't happen that often. But what happens way more often is interacting with social media, with messenger applications, with online forums, with online e-commerce. And all of those places, you're trying to share some kind of personality profile or personality data that customizes the experience for you. And that, I think, is the much broader vision for what digital identity is.
That's an interesting take. I think it's a little, that's just a personal thought on my end. Could it be that this is dependent a little bit more on the use case itself? Because when I think on the big FANG companies, Meta, Alphabet, and so on, I don't, they would have the resources to just use your data in a fully GDPR compliant manner, if you speak of Europe, for example, right now. But they don't, or actually just do the necessary evil for them to still pursue their business case.
And correct. So
my question
they'll only allow you to download a copy. You can go and under GDPR rights, download a copy of your entire Facebook history. But you just get a bunch of spreadsheets, computer readable files, and images that you've uploaded. It's not very usable. You can't actually easily take that and say, okay, I'm done with Facebook. I want to move across to a new competitor platform that has come up on Mastodon. And so you're absolutely right. The FANG companies and the large tech companies, what they generally enable is the bare minimum. They need to comply with the law, but they don't actually make your data very portable, or at least not in an easy way that you can move across to something else. What a lot of decentralized identity allows, to take a social media example, is, let's say I was fed up of Twitter, like a lot of people are. I'm not, I do actually enjoy it. But let's say I was, and I wanted to shift across to Threads. I might not have access to the same username or handle on a different service because it's been taken up by someone else. And just the handle being the same doesn't mean it's the same person. And even if I downloaded all of my data from Twitter, you can't take that across in a portable fashion easily. But what you could achieve with a bit of, like, you know, decentralized identity is being able to say, this, I've set up a new account on Threads or Mastodon. I can validate that I used to be the same person or account, at least, that used to control this handle on Twitter. And this is a verified import of my 10-year Twitter history. And being able to prove all of those facts to someone. So when you start looking at it that way, I think the challenge is that obviously the European Union has been one of the more forward-looking sort of regulatory frameworks within this. There's something called the Digital Markets Act, which they recently sort of, like, passed, that is aimed towards increasing competition and this kind of portability, because even they realize GDPR doesn't actually give people a lot of rights. It maybe helps them go delete their data with the company if they want. That's the one thing it gets it right. But on everything else, it's not really informed consent. You just see a cookie banner pop up and everybody just clicks yes. And then you've just given them permission to do whatever you want with your data. So, and it doesn't actually help you move across to a new service quite easily. So I'm very excited about some of the regulatory changes that are happening. And I think for sure, it would be extremely exciting with some of the work that we're doing with governments as well on being able to have a digital copy of government approved or government issued credentials, or maybe government regulated industries. For example, banking, healthcare, these are all regulated industries for good reasons. But personal challenge I faced is when I go to see a new doctor, they do not have access to my medical files. At best, I get a DVD. What am I supposed to do with that? So I'm excited about those government-led use cases for sure, because I think they have a high degree of confidence, a high degree of trustworthiness and reputation. But I'm also extremely curious about what could happen in the more private sector if our data became more free-flowing.
Love that. I think that's a great ending for that part. If you don't mind, I'm trying to introduce some kind of a new tradition here, and that would be you asking a arbitrary question to whatever guest is coming next, and it can be anything. It's probably a good idea to not have it too technical or too niche in some kind of topic, because not every guest is a technical person, but I leave that up to you.
My question for the next guest would be, what is the most interesting thing you've learned in crypto or Web3 in the past year? Something that surprised you and that you didn't sort of originally anticipate or know about. I find that to be very fascinating when I have that kind of discussion at Web3 conferences or decentralized identity conferences. So that would be my question for the next guest.
Love it. Hey, thanks, Anker. Was really a pleasure talking with you. If you have any links for me to share in the video description, whatever, I'm happy to do so. Otherwise, I would say thanks for taking the time out of your probably very busy day. And yeah, thanks everyone for watching.
So the two links that I'll send this across to you as well, if you want to check us out, go to check.io. That is our protocol level network that has 40 plus different partners who are digital identity, decentralized identity vendors, some of the largest names in the game. They work and build on our network. So you can go check that out if you're more technically inclined. Or if you are not that technically inclined or more interested in our social reputation thing, go to creds.xyz and check out how we are trying to tackle the use cases around being able to take your social reputation and take that anywhere in a private, secure, and portable fashion.
I love it. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Anchor, again. See you next time.
Thanks, Kevin.
WaveAct, the Web3 software company that understands what you want.